Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound. And today's show is for the readers amongst you. We're celebrating independent bookshops all over the world at a time when online and high street giants are laying down obstacles that could easily knock the smaller, better smattering of shops sideways, and they're often succeeding. On the show today, we'll be going from London to Belgrade to Milan and eventually Toronto to discover the novel concepts that keep a bookshop going in 2017. Do stay tuned. The bookshop is a wonderful place. Even if you're not an avid reader, there's something safe about the smell of all those collective pages and the calm of the quiet surroundings as you wander floor to ceiling shelving packed full of tales of love and loss, wizards and wars, secret lands and unknown characters, all stacked neatly for you to discover, absorb and turn into your companions, your lovers. Thinking about all the thousands of stories contained within one small bookshop is a mite overwhelming, but there's always a well-read book enthusiast on hand to steer you towards the next author you might fall for, or the guide that might transform a trip into an adventure. And these people are far better informed than any old Amazon recommendation. But it's the same old high street story that's plagued the independent bookshop, battles with online retail. In the UK alone, over 500 bookshops have closed since 2005. However, while e-sales proved to be fierce competition, the e-book hasn't taken off as much as was expected, meaning there's still a thirst for the physical object. So let's hit the shops to find out what booksellers are doing to stay afloat. Let's start here in London before we venture further afield. Libreria is a small bookshop located just off East London's Brick Lane. It was launched just over a year ago and boasts a decent stock of titles organised under alternative genres to help you find something unexpected. Forget the usual non-fiction, fantasy and crime sections. There's a bit more imagination in the stacking of these shelves. It also hosts talks on everything from speculative fiction to critical theory to conversations with the likes of Michael Chabon. But in a relaxed, friendly, unpretentious setting with a fridge full of beers. Sounds all right, doesn't it? Let's hear from Libreria's manager then, Paddy Butler.
We're a little bit of a different bookshop in that we've organised our shelves thematically, which means that essentially we're kind of reimagining what the bookshop might be or what a bookshop might be, in the sense that we have fiction beside non-fiction. So we have different themes, such as enchantment for the disenchanted, enlightenment, brain and being, seeing the sky. So the idea is that you might have a love for Angela Carter, and you might go and have a look at a book on the shelf by Angela Carter, and then next to it you might find a biographical history of Joan of Arc by Helen Castor. So in a sense, it's that kind of exploration and discovery, which is what Libreria is about. That's the philosophy in essence, you know. The founders, co-founders of Second Home, Rowan Silva and Sam Aldington, it was their concept in essence. And Rowan, who's very passionate about literature, and Borges is a big author for him, and it was his reading of Borges' short story The Infinite Library, The Library of Babel. Libreria is born out of that, in the sense that the brief given to the architects was infinite shelves, infinite library, infinite story, and therefore they kind of came up with the idea of the huge mirror at the back and barisol ceiling, which gives the effect of infinite shelves, especially at night time when the bookshop is quite glowing. It looks as if the shelves are reaching up to the skies. So it's quite beautiful.
Well, how do you, as a team, decide which books go on which shelves then? Do you find that you'll come in one day and one of the booksellers has moved something into a different section?
Well, yeah, it's a good question. And it's entirely that. Something that fits into enlightenment can easily fit into brain and being, you know. I mean, there's no hard and fast rules. I think that's in the spirit of what the bookshop is. Again, going back to that sense of discovery, you could have James Joyce in enlightenment, but you could also have him in the city, you know, Ulysses being about Dublin, but also about everything else.
And so what do you find that the customer's reaction is when they come in here? What sort of questions are they asking you?
I guess they're a little confused if it's their first time to the bookshop and they haven't really read anything about it or heard about it. But I think that quickly changes to a kind of almost infantile celebration or excitement about, you know, again, that sense of discovery. And yeah, I suppose, you know, they're wondering how it's set out, because I suppose most people are just used to a conventional layout in a bookshop. And yeah, the most common question is how is this working, you know, or how do you know where everything is? So I suppose, yeah, it's intriguing and it's exciting, but it also works. And I think that's the most enthusiastic thing for us, in the sense that a lot of people come in and by the time they're finished, they're walking away with five books that they wouldn't normally have chosen.
You're not just a bookshop, you do collaborations with some of the other institutions in London, and you also have guest curators who come in and do things here too. Tell us a bit about the other stuff that you do here.
So at any one time, we might have five or six authors or indeed curators from outside, you know, working in London or indeed around the world. We, you know, invite them to guest curate the shelves. So at the moment we have Philippe Sands, who recently won the Bailey Gifford Prize for East West Street. He curated a selection of 10 books. Hannah Barry, a distinguished curator, Hannah Barry Gallery and Bold Tendencies, came in. She curated a shelf. And Max Porter, the celebrated, amazing author of Grief is a Thing with Feathers. And they all had their own take on how they would conceive of it or how they would think about curating the shelves, you know. So it wasn't their top 10 or their top favorite books. I mean, Max Porter said, oh, you know, why don't I'll choose five books that I would sell if I was standing with you in the bookshop. And that goes back to Max's Daunt days as a bookseller. So, you know, I think everybody has their own little take on it. Yeah, and we've collaborated with Hannah Barry as well. We showed Mary Jacoty, one of Hannah's brilliant young artists, Mary Jacoty. We exhibited her work in the bookshop for Freeze Month. And we also collaborated with the Serpentine Gallery for their London Marathon event, which happens 24 hours over a particular weekend. So yeah, there's lots of different collaborations with different people and different figures. And we're not constricted by, it's not purely literary. So, you know, we're not constricted in any sense, and we want to open it up to different voices and to different people within London.
Going back to that whole never-ending story thing and thinking about the future of the bookshop, do you think the future of the bookshop is looking beyond books and getting voices outside the literary world to come into bookshops?
Yeah, I think so. I think it works both ways. I think, in essence, if you, well, my understanding of human history, if we're going to be philosophical about it, is about the narrative and it is about story. So I think it always comes back to the book, doesn't it? But obviously, you know, we want to kind of break out of the conventional understanding of what a bookshop is. And I think if you look at creative areas within society anyway, a lot of them are converging. And I think that cross-pollination, that creativity, that room for collaboration, i.e. breaking out of the silos, as they say, I think that's what we're driving at, and that's what we want. We want architects in here talking about books. We want poets in here talking about economics. You know, that's what we want. We want to, like, push that more and more.
That was Paddy Butler, manager of Libraria in London. To the Balkans now for our next bookshop. Belgrade-based Buka is one of the most forward-thinking publishers in Southeast Europe. It specialises in translations of quality contemporary literature from Ali Smith to Ryo Murakami, all in bespoke covers. But now it's also a destination. Buka store opened in the centre of Belgrade's Old Town last month, and it's carrying its handcrafted publishing philosophy into the retail sector. Locally sourced food, drinks and stationery are also all part of the mix that's already attracting local and international customers to the shop on Sara Urosha Street, along with a lovingly chosen selection of books, Natch. Monocle's Guy Delaunay went to have a chinwag with Booker's founder, Ivan Befts.
My name is Ivan Bevts. I'm the editor of the Buka Publishing House, and now I'm the owner of the Buka store. Our books are selling really good on online. They're also selling really good in a big retail chains. But still, I think this place is some kind of a brand extension for our publishing house. And this is the place where people will come and speak with us, meet us, and maybe exchange ideas with us. We offer to our audience new, modern, good quality contemporary literature, which was not published in Serbia in a big numbers in the last couple of years. And also we offer different package of these books, which means that we hired the best young Serbian designers to create covers for these books. So therefore our books became really visible in all bookstores, and we became very, very popular in a short time. So now we are proud publishers of authors like Elena Ferrante, like Karl Uwe Knausgård, like Michel Houellebecq, but we also publish some very interesting authors from other countries, like for example Frédéric Becbédet from France, or Viktor Pelevin from Russia, to, I don't know, Andrzej Stasiuk from Poland, or recently we published a few books of the Oscar winner Paolo Sorrentino, and his books are really, really popular here. This is a very central Belgrade. We are just 100 meters of the Knez Mihailova, which is like the most popular pedestrian zone of Belgrade. And this part of the Belgrade is very close to Obilice Venac, and people who lives in Belgrade or people who come to Belgrade know that this is actually a really nice place. It has a Parisian atmosphere from my point of view. These are old buildings from the beginning of the 20th century. They have really this middle European schmeck, European look, and when you come here, this is a great place to visit small shops, to sit for a cafe, or to browse books. We are offering the books from the almost all small publishing houses in Serbia, because in Serbia they're a really vibrant scene, and we have a lot of small publishing houses, so this is the place for them to be recognized by the buyers. But also we have a great selection of the gift program of the designed small design stuff, stationery stuff, jewelry, some small things like bags, all designed by very young people who are new in the business, and we think that this is a great thing to promote them and to help the whole scene to grow. We don't like to make pressure on our customers, so we like to let them in and to enjoy books. We just let them know that we are here if they need some help. So the ideal customer is someone who will browse books, who will enjoy books for tens of minutes, maybe for a whole hour, and finally, if he needs help, we are here. Find something for himself which he couldn't find anywhere else. That will make us proud. And also, if he has time, we will offer him a good cup of coffee and an excellent cake to enjoy and maybe to start reading of this book immediately. I think that the Buka store is something which we really can make a brand, and maybe we can open a few more things like this in Belgrade, or maybe one in Novi Sad, we will see. But let's say this is our 5-year plan, that maybe we will open another store, but first we have to make this store perfect.
Books in translation are a booming industry at the moment, as we've discussed on Culture before. Between 2015 and 2016, there was a 96% rise in sales of translated fiction in the UK. Over in Milan, we're going to meet a publisher like Buka, who found a gap in the almighty market of Italian publishing and then went on to open his own bookshop. Pietro Rincardi runs a publishing house that was set up by his mother. It's called Iperborea and exclusively translates Nordic books into Italian, which is then bound in elegantly slim covers. Not too long ago, Biancardi joined forces with some creative friends, and together they decided to fulfil their dream of opening a bookstore in Milan called Libreria Verso. Spread over two floors, this shop is a sort of combination of the last two that we've visited. It's home to a cafe, bar and a space for talks, and it organises its books by publisher and alternative genres too. And the publisher thing is big in Italy. While book covers in the UK and the US are individually designed, with not much more than a nod to who put it out, in Italy all books released by one publisher will follow the same cover design, making them not just iconic as individual brands, but also an eye-catching way to display collectively. Producer Holly went to meet Pietro Biancardi at Libreria Verso in Milan.
We all love books, we work in books, so I think that just like everybody who loves books has this dream since childhood to be a bookseller, open a bookshop, so it's a part romantic dream. But then there was also more practical opportunity to do it, because in this area of Milan, we are in the center, south of the center of Milan, it's a very lively area called Ticinese. Maybe in the last 5 to 10 years, many bookshops, like 5 or 6 bookshops, have closed in the area, so there was none left. And so we decided that it was nonsense that in this area of Milan there couldn't be a bookshop.
It's a bookshop, but you also have a bar and you do talks and things. Tell us a bit about the other things that you offer here.
Not only the 5 friends that founded the bookshop are not book lovers, but also bar lovers. So we wanted to combine our passions. This is also the like romantic side. But then we also saw the opportunity, because in Milan, in the center at least, there was a lack of this kind of bookshops that are opening now in all over the world, in the cities, that combine a particular selection of books with a bar. And also there was not in the center of the city a place that could be used so easily for presentations of books, of authors. So we try to do something that we saw in many cities all over the world, and there was not in the center of Milan. There are many, now there are some in other areas of Milan, but not in the center. So we try to do something like here in the place where we are talking, like it's the upstairs of the bookshop, and it can remind of a living room. And this side of the bookshop is one of the one that work better.
You were saying that you looked at bookshops around the world who are doing a similar thing. Are there any that really stand out for you?
Yes. Well, there are some in Italy too, like a place I really like, for example, in Rome, is the Altro Quando bookshop. It's in the center. Here in Milan, there is a very nice bookshop, which is called the Gogol and Company, that it's very beautiful, but it's a bit in the periphery area. And then I liked very much in Madrid, Tipos Infames is a really nice bookshop, for example. And then in Barcelona too, the Malpasso bookshop is a very nice one. One of the most famous and who's a model for everybody is like McNally and Jackson in New York.
And you've got a really beautiful selection of books in this bookshop. How do you choose which publishers you want to stock?
2 of the partners are publishers, and we are publishers of independent, small publishing houses who try to do a quality work with finding literature that is not so easy, so commercial. We know how it is difficult for these independent publishers to find place in the major book chains all over Italy. But I think that the Italian independent publisher scene is absolutely very lively. It's full of ideas, very innovative. You find really, really quality books. And there are, I think, maybe 40, 50 very, very interesting publishers, independent publishers, that you usually don't find, or you find just a little selection of their books in the major bookstores. So we decided to give them more space, more opportunity to show not only the 3-4 books that are maybe bestsellers, but to understand them, all the catalogs. So that this is why all the exposition of the bookshop follows the publisher.
And when you have a real success like Elena Ferrante, do you find that there's a sudden real interest in Italian publishing by international readers?
Yes, I think that Elena Ferrante's success threw a light on the what was going on in Italy. It started before the success of Elena Ferrante, but probably Elena Ferrante increased this quite a lot. And I saw that every year there is a significant growth in the sales of rights of Italian books abroad. And also probably it's driven by the success in the United States and the opening up of the United States, because traditionally there it's a huge market, but traditionally in the United States they don't translate much fiction. Like there is the famous number 3%, that is the number of books that are translated there, which is nothing compared to the numbers of translated books we have here in Italy, which is around 25, or in France and Germany. Germany, they translate everything. It's a fantastic place for being a reader, Germany. And now this 3% figure is probably, I speak with American publishers and they tell me that it's now easier to publish foreign literature there. They have more attention from readers, from bookshops, from critics, so it's growing, and one part of it is Italian literature.
It was published in the UK, and it's also come with something Nordic, very peculiar, because he's young.
That was Pietro Biancardi at Libreria Verso in Milan, and our final stop takes us over to Canada, for a bookshop that's not actually a bookshop at all. While the resurgence in sales of physical books has underlined that print is most definitely not dead, that doesn't necessarily mean everyone is rushing to open new bookshops. At least in a city like Toronto, where retail rents can be pricey and the book business remains risky. With Flying Books, former publisher Martha Sharp has landed an alternative concept by setting up stands that feature a small, smartly curated selection of titles inside existing businesses like cafes, general stores, and a hotel. Monocle's Toronto correspondent Chris Frey popped by one of these locations to chat with Sharp and find out how Flying Books is taking off.
We're inside a cafe in Toronto right now called The Good Neighbor, and we're standing in front of one of your mini bookstores. What's it look like?
The room itself is beautiful. That's important. It's a nice space to be in. So the shelves are built by the owner. They have a mix of my books, the Flying Books, and also just the coffee and coffee paraphernalia that he also sells alongside it. Right now there's 9 different titles, a few copies of each title, and the handwritten descriptions that people have been telling me they like so much.
Where did the idea come from? Like, why, you know, use other people's spaces instead of like opening your own bookshop?
Step one was realizing Toronto, downtown Toronto, needed more bookstores, but then the realization dawned that, of course, I didn't have a huge pile of cash to put down for a commercial lease on a space, a standalone space. So I thought, also, there are all these fantastic, beautiful places popping up, and there's no reason for them to not also sell books. And I just think books should be everywhere.
And another important aspect is the actual curation. I mean, these books aren't permanent. You rotate the books in and out every so often. How do you choose the books?
I choose the books based on, my own. I mean, I've been in book publishing for a really long time. I just live and breathe and think about books all day long, and talk about books to whoever. I quickly identify if somebody is a book person or not. And I pick them based on what I've heard about, what interests me, what I think is important and significant. And increasingly, of course, what I think would work in each of the spaces where Flying Books operates. So they have to be great books that I, you know, would, I'm dying to get people to read.
And sometimes you also have authors curate the selection, so it's not just you picking them, but you bring in other people.
Of course, being writers, eclectic interests, very specific interests, and I love presenting their own book alongside the books that are fascinating and interesting and to them. people were instantly, I was elevated like I was some kind of hero. It was amazing. And it, to me, it was just a simple thing that anybody could have thought of doing. As for the finding partners to bring the stores to, that was also surprisingly simple. A lot of people, I mean, they want reasons to make their businesses sticky, you know? And people who like buying books are a pretty, it turns out, interesting and well-educated and well-off demographic. So I think it's not an unattractive kind of customer to bring into your space.
What were you doing before starting Flying Book?
So I started in publishing as an editor at a company that is no longer, called General and Stoddart Publishing. But they were then the owners of House of Anansi Press. And I was able to work on that list, and some really good things happened, and then worked my way up to publisher and worked there for, it ended up being like 12 and a half years that I worked at Anansi. Then I moved to New York and lived there for a while. I worked a little bit with N Plus One magazine and Audible, the audiobook publisher. Then moved back for an editorial job, and then found myself in a new phase of my career and wanting to just start something that would really give to the city what I thought the city needed in the form of great books right in front of people in these spaces that they love going to already.
And now you're no longer just a bookstore. You have the Flying Book School of Reading and Writing. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
So that grew out of conversations with writers like Damian Rogers. She was actually the very first one to prompt it. Or she had an idea for a class, didn't want to pitch necessarily one of the established creative writing institutions that are all great and doing what they do very well. But she just wanted to be in and out of there, teach a class that was kind of related to a book idea that she had. And we said, well, why don't we rent a space and then we'll promote it and we'll call it a school. And so then I talked to some more writers, and I talked to Adam Saul, who's the dean. And we did it in a kind of, it's still loose, but it's a little bit more formal now and more regular. So we've had Carl Wilson and Desmond Cole, who's a columnist at the Toronto Star, and Lynn Crosby, who's a fantastic writer, writing about like life writing, teaching about life writing. And Russell Smith is the next one. He's going to teach a course called You Can Write a Novel.
And is there anything that, having started Flying Books, it's given back to you? Like anything you've learned about readers and writers, or reading and writing and the business of it?
Every phase of my career has given me sort of a different angle on books and getting them to readers and working with writers and selling directly. It's so satisfying to have them walk away with the perfect choice.
And what's next for Flying Books? Do you have ambitions to actually get back into publishing?
I do. Yes. I'm talking to some people. I'm really interested. I mean, that's kind of my natural kind of setting, is publishing books. And yeah, probably something like that will happen before too long.
That was Martha Sharp of Flying Books in Toronto, bringing us to the end of today's show. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was Holly Chapter and Verse Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. For the time being, I've been Robert Bound. Thank you very much for tuning in.